Somebody said a thing about how, I think it was Carafan, said something about how the idea of how it has to be this violin, it has to be this violin, is like,
yeah,
contrary to another point.
Yes, it was
contrary to another point said in the VN, where like at the start somebody was like, oh, well, you just have to find new happiness and move on and stuff like that. And he said that he rubbed him the wrong way because it didn't really fit. And Arian says something about how, oh, when you have multiple writers, that's something that just happens.
Yes.
But I didn't get rubbed the wrong way about that. I felt like they're actually two different, there isn't a one surefire way to view situation, and then there's like a thing where there's stuff that is gone for good, and then there's stuff that can still be salvaged.
Still, yeah. So
I was like, oh, I can talk about that.
You can repair anything if you have enough money. I think
those two things can't really be.
Or if you try hard enough.
Kyo is like a love-hate relationship. She's like the girls in Masai, where like everyone liked them, but I was like, I don't really like them, but at the same time, I kind of do. Kyo is one of those.
I think Kyo's a bitch.
She's a bitch. Yeah, she's a bitch.
She's got a fucking shit personality, but I still like her.
Tomoya does say that. Like, that scene in the burger restaurant, that was just, yeah. I cannot pull that off.
It's just the waitress gives them, like, an uneasy smile, and then Kyo just blurs it and she walks away. It's like, wow. Jesus Christ. But less about Kyo. How about Kotomi? I thought she was a lot more charming in the Vision Novel than she was in the anime. I
care less about this character in the anime.
It's been too long. I was
very surprised with how much I enjoyed her.
Which is interesting, because the content is mostly the same. It's just something about the presentation that's sort of changed.
The presentation is different, and that's just a visual novel thing, where like something about how your perception is in certain scenarios definitely changes how.
See, I read the VN a long time ago, and I didn't feel that Kotomi was this endearing when I first read it. I felt a lot more connected to her the second time around. I don't know. I can't explain why. Yeah. I kind of felt like Tomoya, where I wanted to see her make more friends and, you
know, that maternal paternal instinct, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of.
Kotomi's the real Lolly of Clannad.
Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why it's easier to become attached to what's going on in the visual novel, and it becomes much more interesting to the viewers because of the whole being in Tomoya's head really changes that perception. Because in the anime, it's kind of a mixed thing, whereas in the VN there's much more descriptiveness, and the words they use kind of adds a lot to the experience.
I feel like a lot of the development that happened in this Vision novel didn't really occur the same way in the anime. For example, there was like teaching Kotomi the Tsukami. Like, she never really got it in the anime, but in the Vision novel you do see an improvement. Like, she is actually getting the timing right after a while. And then there's the violin playing. In the anime, it's like, oh, she's god-awful. Stop. Get that thing away from her. But in the Vision novel, she does show improvement. So, like,
yeah, it's, they really, the screen stops shaking.
Yeah, they play up more. They want you to, like, side with Kotomi a bit more in the Vision novel. Whereas in the anime, she's kept a side character.
There's a change in the actual, there's a change in the actual pacing, and not necessarily the content. It still covers the same content, but obviously the pacing changes a lot here, because a lot of people say that this route kind of drags on, and I don't think it does. For some reason, even though it was long, I felt like everything was actually very natural and nice, and the actual things that happen in the route actually kind of happen unnaturally fast. Still, even though there is kind of a lot of development in long scenes.
Before we move on, I'd just like to introduce us. So, we are Kazumatsuri, a community for Ki fans, and this is the Kotomi episode of the Clannad Book Club podcast. Joining us this week, we have the regular cast of myself, Aspiredy, together with Biscuit Dough.
Not Danny!
Your timing was a bit off on that one.
And I guess we'll start off with our 30-second recap. I'm going to be doing this one this time, guys.
Yeah.
Use your earplugs in case it just gets too unbearable. In this route of Nandayana, mysterious library girl knows what you did, even if you don't remember it yet. She doesn't talk to anyone else and has no interest in making friends, so as general good guy, it's your job to help her make friends with all the girls who want to get in your pants. Well, all's well that ends well, and they all join together to protect Book Girl's fragile smile. Unfortunately, everyone dies alone. But it's okay, because no matter what happens, we'll always love each other, so we're never truly alone. Also, something about a teddy bear. This bends!
Not there!
Not there!
Not there!
Ahoka! Not there!
Kusikika!
Oh my god. That's so sad.
Oh, what did you say?
I thought that was a...
Anyway.
This route destroyed me, guys. It's so fucking relentless. Like,
I was...
a lot of it... like, people might criticize the aspects of the writing where it kind of, like, the worst possible scenario lumped on the worst possible scenario, and it just keeps compounding to make this horrible, tragic story where we have to feel sorry for Kotomi. But it still got me really emotionally invested regardless. There are a few lines that just, like, holy shit, like, hold... calm down, game, calm down. It's like this one scene where Kotomi's like, you know how they really stretch out the scene where she's all alone after her parents have disappeared?
Yeah, that one.
Living
that
in the house alone.
That one is just...
they really stretch that out a bit too, you know, uncomfortably long. You know, and there was this one scene where it's like, I'm going to look at the TV and I'm going to see that no one else is there and I'm the only one left in the world. Like, oh my god!
The best part of all that is... that they didn't use CGs, there's no, like, backgrounds or anything, but their use of noise is phenomenal.
Yeah, very, very good. Going up the stairs, the opening the door. I thought there was so... I was on a plane when I was reading that, and I saw something was happening on the plane.
It all started with the knocking.
It became a sound novel for a little while.
That was really good. I really enjoyed that, because, like, a lot of the VNs don't make very good use of that. Or, like, the quality isn't very good, but this actually sounded, like, awesome. Like, there was lots of unique little bells and whistles, if you will. Like, it's very cool.
The banging on the door, the phone ringing, and the running up and down the stairs, yeah. And then, oh my god.
It really gets, like, you into, you know, the novel, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's one thing.
It's like,
thing.
The adults outside aren't what's scaring me right now. It's the thought of being alone. It's like, oh my god, just imagine this poor little girl. You know, trapped in this house and not knowing what's going on.
And I like how it does go on, like, uncomfortably long, because you find out later that it was, like, only, like, that one day or whatever, but you felt like it was much longer whenever she's talking about being hungry and wanting food. And you feel like it's multiple days, but it was only, like, a span of a couple hours. But it felt a lot longer.
Yeah.
That's probably what it felt like to Kotomi. It must have felt like an eternity to her.
Very, very clever presentation.
Yeah, I give it an A+ for that in that regard.
Yeah, because, like, even though the anime adapted the route almost perfectly, minus one or two, like, romance scenes, it didn't feel the same. I don't know why. It's just the presentation is so much better than the visual novel in this case.
It was a lot more forgettable in the anime.
Maybe we're just being elitists. Who knows?
No, I swear I'm not. I just rewatched the anime and
it's weird. When it's like, I watched the anime like forever ago, but just something about this route was so much better to read than it was to watch. I don't know why. I have no idea why.
Yeah, but that's just how it is, I guess.
Like all the other stuff we've read in this VN so far, there's like, it's really not one thing in this route. There's like kind of a lot of things happening. But they all kind of happen hand in hand, and it works really well in the end. It feels natural. But like I was saying about how the route feels long, but the actual events that are happening actually do kind of happen at a faster pace than normal. Which brings up one of the interesting things about this route is, why not? We'll just do this now. What did y'all rate the route out of curiosity?
I gave
it a 5.
I gave it a 4.
I gave it a 5. I was gonna give it a 4, but let me explain why I had to change my mind. So that's just perfect so far, man. I'm sorry. Anyways, so, like, I didn't like, and I guess this just plays more to the fact that the route's really long, I really didn't like how things, I hate saying this too, things felt convenient to me with how their group comes together mostly based upon the idea of that there's something going on where Ryo and Kyo want to be, and Kyo kind of hints towards this at a point where they want to be with Tomoya for some reason. And then Nagisa is just kind of there, kind of in her little plot for her reasons. And then Kotomi has obviously got things going on with Tomoya, and he wants to, like, help her and stuff. And it felt really convenient. And the fact that they were able to just, like, group up together and become friends so quickly and easily was just like, what? And they even say, like, a few days later, they're like, wow, it's only been a few days, but it's felt like forever. And it's just very strange and unnatural to me. And I was like, I don't really like how this glue just so easily stuck, right? I didn't like that. However, this completely changes and actually becomes really, really brilliant whenever the main tragedy of the route comes to head, where Kotomi basically just disappears. And Kyo brings up, she's like, I wonder if we're even really her friends. And Tomoya is just kind of like, wow, I want to punch her right now. But she's kind of right. Like, she's on the money, because they've only really been hanging out for like a week. And then something terrible happens and everything is in disarray. And they're like all separated for a while. And it's like, just like that. And it becomes a very integral part of the route that they actually don't know each other. Like, you never really truly know somebody, especially in such a short amount of time. So the way that played into their kind of absence from one another very quickly and suddenly was, like, actually well played. And that, I felt like that was worth it in the end.
And yet, even though she says that, you can still see them and her and the rest of her friends going so much out of their way just to help Kotomi.
If they really weren't friends.
If they really weren't friends, then they wouldn't be doing that. Even if they've only spent a few days together. And even if they're doubting that, you can see that when push comes to shove, they will fight for their friend.
There was just that very subtle cracks in the armor, and it was like, oh, this is good.
Yes, it is very good. That part of writing is very good, yeah.
And, I mean, that also goes to show that, like, there's also lots of other aspects of Clannad that are still playing into this route. And so it actually goes hand in hand, and it doesn't feel like it's just taking advantage of other aspects. It's actually nice.
What I really liked about this route is that this is one of the few routes in the game where Tomoya actually has a past with the heroine. And they foreshadow this really well. From the very first time you meet Kotomi, it's established. No, it's not established, but if you read it, you'll see that Kotomi recognizes Tomoya, and he doesn't recognize her. You know, the first scene is like where she responds to being called Kotomi-chan, and, you know, inviting him to eat and sit down and all that. It's like, why are you doing this all for a complete stranger? She's just like, stranger? And then she realizes that, oh, wait, he doesn't actually remember me. And then we understand the full context of the route, that becomes all the more tragic.
Like, I think it's less foreshadowing, because if you don't know the backstory, then you would not at all think that there's something going on.
Who was it?
Foreshadowing doesn't have to be obvious.
Who was it that said something about how the foreshadowing was kind of direct, and how, like, there was a lot of it in there to the point of where it felt really natural, almost like Susumoto wanted the reader to start to try to piece things together on their own, so that it was kind of a natural revelation as opposed to something sudden.
And you have, like, the dreams and stuff it keeps having.
Was it that said that? Because that's a really, really, really good point.
I don't remember.
This route didn't hit me very hard. Either. This route didn't hit me very hard, like, on an emotional level, but I still, like, thoroughly enjoyed it. And that's one of the reasons why, and it's also the same reason why it didn't hit me too deeply emotionally, because I kind of, like, felt it coming. it really does feel a lot like a journey rather than a deep moral or something that's supposed to be shocking. You actually feel an experience from this like you would, you know, any other kind of romance novel or yeah. any other kind mm-hmm. of story. And that's really good. It plays back to the fact that it is like kind of a lengthy route, which is, I think, perfect. I think if it had been any shorter, then it wouldn't have felt as natural.
You're talking about romance, if I can sidetrack a bit, because I did really, really like how the romance played out in this route. I know that Biz said that he mentioned Yukine route last time, that he liked how the romance.
Well,
I guess
this is good too. This is really good.
Yeah, it felt very natural to me because it's more like something that Tomoya just suddenly realizes how important Kotomi is to him. And then he realizes while talking to that guy that, hey, I she's not yet my lover, but I want her to be one time. And I really noticed that because I made the choice to not, I forgot what choice it was, to not help Kotomi with the guy. And he doesn't think that if you don't make that choice. He doesn't think that at all. And yeah, it's something that I like as part of the writing.
Yeah, it's very, there's lots of very good inner monologues with Tomoya and his feelings, and then like how he wishes to kind of go about things. He's very careful, very calculating, like most people would be in a kind of a situation like that, while also kind of flustered, if you will.
I guess one question I have to ask for you guys is, do you think Tomoya is a good match for Kotomi?
I think she is, actually. I didn't at first, but it definitely came around.
Yes, I do. The reason why, and I think he's a better match for Kotomi than he is for Tomoya. I'm sorry if anyone takes offense to that. But I always see Tomoya as the kind of guy who needs something to motivate him to get things done, you know? And Kotomi is, I mean, let's face it, she is very, she's very needy in that if you don't help her out, you feel like something bad is gonna happen. And that is what drives Tomoya to actually do something. You saw what he did for the garden, and he had so many chances to give up, but he still pushed through it because of how he felt for Kotomi. And I think that's what makes him a good match, because it helps Tomoya actually grow as a character. And the character development in this book, like, especially, is
it's very cathartic, that whole scene, because, like, once he starts digging into that garden, he has his goal set in his mind, right? Like, he's gonna do this, but, like, once he's actually working, he's not stressed about anything that's going on. He's actually kind of calmed. You can definitely tell that he's, like, there's a passion in the work that he's doing. There's, like, just that motivation there that makes it very cathartic, I think. Helps him keep calm.
Tomoe's a very paternal character.
Yes.
In that, you know, he's the breadwinner of the family. He seems very at home in doing, like, physical labor to, like, support someone. But, like, just supporting people in general is kind of his biggest character trait. He needs someone to support. Like, I think it was Kuketsuki Mio on the forum said he's a natural caregiver. And that if he doesn't have someone to care for, he feels that a bit lost with his life. Which
really
could also explain, like, you know, the bad relationship, the bad dynamic he had with Tomoya is because Tomoya was looking after him and not the other way around, and he felt useless.
Yeah.
This is a really good actual character development for Tomoya, and one of the really important traits about him, because when you think about his past and what he lacked, you can then think about what he wants to give to other people. Not to mention, again, that as another important piece of the writing, and actually a piece of Kotomi's character here, she takes things into her own hands, too. I mean, you can't say that Tomoya is, like, the end-all be-all of her ability to develop. While he plants the seeds for her to go meet friends, for example, she's still able to come to that conclusion and then set that goal for herself on her own. She makes that decision herself. You carve your own path, right? And I actually really liked one of these kind of cooperative developments between the two characters here, and that they start helping each other out quite a bit. And that Tomoya naturally, as opposed to being forced, he naturally becomes a more, model student in this route, as opposed to doing it for some reason. It just kind of naturally happens, and he just says, damn, I'm like a normal student now. I'm waking up every day and going to school. It's really good.
And he stops skipping class, even though he's supposed to meet Kotomi by skipping class.
At the exact same time, Kotomi is coming to this conclusion that she's not going to be skipping class, and she's going to be going and trying to make friends, because she knows it's probably what she should do, and that's what she wants to do. And that comes to her naturally. That's what she wants to do, even though, Tomoya may help. I mean, you're always going to run into different people and have experiences that help drive you in different directions, but you're still going to make that choice yourself. Things are going to influence you, but you're the one who's going to take action. That's kind of a psychological thing in there.
I totally agree, and that's very important.
And that's something that I've personally just grown, in my life. I've learned to not take so much from influence. There's definitely things that are going to influence me, but I am in control of my path in the end. I'm going to be the end-all. If something is going to make me mad, then, how mad it makes me and how I react to that thing that makes me mad, in the end, it is going to be my choice how I react. So I need to be in control of that myself.
Yeah. Getting very psychological, Piz.
Yeah.
Oh, my voice. But that's so true. That's something I really care about in these sort of stories, is where you don't want the harem to be too dependent on the protagonist to survive. In the end, there's nothing wrong. It's a balance. There's nothing wrong with being able to accept help from other people when you need it. That's, a very important thing, because our society emphasizes independence, not needing anybody else to do what you want. But that's not always true. You're always going to have people that support you in life and help you get to where you need to go. But as long as they're not the entire reason you're living your life, then it's okay. And I feel like there's a distinction made where Kotomi is able to do her own thing and not be forced into that by someone else. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can also...
That's a psychological tangent.
I mean, it's also definitely that she's relying on just Tomoya. You can see how important Ryo and Kyo and Nagisa are to her.
Exactly.
I really love that whole group of friends that they have. They're quirky. They're a really quirky group,
Wasn't that scene at the end really good, where it's Tomoya has his whole thing of supporting her and saving her from herself, with the whole "I'm gonna be with you even after I disappear" sort of speech, which was really fucking good, by the way. But then the exact same thing happens with the friends, and there's they all say the exact same thing, and Katomi's "Wow, I've got some really good friends here." So emotional when Nagisa hears the story. They all react differently, but Nagisa just breaks down crying. It's "Oh my god, Nagisa, you're gonna make me cry too."
That's so Nagisa of her.
And Kyo's just playing it off with her, casual banter. Nagisa's just...
I think she's Kyo's the one who said, I'll haunt you as a ghost or something.
the writing here is brilliant. There's just so many little things, I don't know if it's just the localization and they picked the perfect words here, but there's just so much that just it's just perfect. I kept mentioning how that gardening was catharsis, right? And he says, evil is peering out from the misshapen garden, how there's all the nasty parts of the garden that are still all messed up. But, hey, there's always tomorrow. Even though there's still darkness, you can always go through the light. And then, whenever he's talking to Nagisa outside of the house, whenever she goes, it's described as moonlight peeking through a snowy sky whenever she looks at him. And I was like, that's a really weird kind of statement to say. It's a weird line to me. So I was I'm going to read into this a little bit. What does that mean? And it's just because you think, okay, so moonlight, so it's nighttime. And so, even at the darkest it could possibly be, it's the middle of the night. It's a snowy sky. It's just gray, nothing but clouds and snow. But the moonlight still pierces through the clouds. And it's like, even on the other side of the world, when you're a world away, the light still shines through. Like, the sun's still there. There's always that light that you can chase, right? So, like, just thinking about these little things really brings out the literature in me. And it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Yuichi Suzumoto, guys.
Even his descriptions, about how, like, he finds the garden and he's like, oh, it's like I just unearthed some ancient ruins. Or he describes the library as, like, these ancient ruins. He uses this twice. He says, like, the library is like a ruins. And then they also do this personification where he mentions the spines of the books and how they're, like, I thought of it as, it's like, they're the backs of people. But, like, you can't really speak to them. They can only listen because they're not looking at you. But, like, they're just kind of the silent listeners of Katomi and her little world. Oh, there's so much cool stuff in this room. Helios Alpha in the audience, by the way, was the person who was mentioning the thing before that I couldn't remember. Was talking about... shit! Now I can't remember
You don't remember what the thing was.
Helios Alpha was the one who was talking about foreshadowing. But he also just said something that actually comes straight out of the root, where Katomi's parent says, hey, you gotta describe the world with the most beautiful words possible, right? Booyah. Here's your meta shit.
Katomi's parents are so cool.
Yeah. You can just vividly, like, imagine them just from the descriptions they give to...
And that's something that the anime doesn't give you.
Yeah.
No. There was something I wanted to comment on, was that in that scene where Tomoya is describing his time with Katomi as a child, not just then, but he talks about, like, he mentions Katomi's mother and how, like, she's, like, a beautiful presence, and he's like, he gets envious. Like, this is the thing I want. I'm just like, that was obviously family. The wording was better than that. But yeah, like, it keeps coming back to this idea of him having this nostalgic want for a peaceful family life. And it keeps coming up throughout the game, over and over and over. Tomoya wants a mummy and a daddy so bad. It's like, I don't know if there's a lot we can say about that right now, but yeah, they just keep bringing it up. It's just sort of interesting.
Based Class A teacher, by the way... Is she not, like, a total bro?
She's a bro.
Specifically tells Tomoya that this has happened before.
Yeah.
She'll say that.
She probably wants to see Kotomi become a better person as well.
Probably. Going back to how Katomi remembering Tomoya and, like, waiting for him for all these years, it really hits hard when you realize, like, going back to the common route and the Sunohara ending where you have the choice to, like, hang out with her for a bit and then just dump her completely, and it's like Katomi's like, please don't leave me.
Isn't that just like, oh my god, that's just classic Jesus, like, childhood,
Jesus Christ,
classic childhood friend bullshit in VNs. This is not the first time I've experienced this. It sucks every time. So bad.
Man, I'm an asshole.
But hey, you gotta
the reason why you do that.
No. Remember what Tomoya says, even in another world, even I'm still gonna be here with you somewhere. So, hey.
Hey.
There was another scene that really occurred to me. Like, I didn't think about this until after. But when I did, I was like, oh my god. There was one scene where, on their first date, and Tomoya is going to the date, and he wakes up late, and it's 45 minutes late, he arrives, and then he arrives, and, like, Katomi's like, yeah, sorry, I was just here, like, an hour ago, don't worry about it, everything's fine. But then I just thought for a second, what if she's just putting on a face? Can you imagine how she might have felt if she was just, like, standing there for an hour, realizing that the boy she told her she promised to meet wasn't coming? It's kind of mind-blowing. I feel like if I was in her position, I would have been terrified. I'm just, like, reliving that trauma.
You gotta speak to Katomi's strength here, because remember, she recognizes him right off the bat, so she's just sitting there having to deal with this shit all the time because he doesn't recognize her.
Yeah, I have two things to say about that. First is, considering Kotomi's personality, she would probably wait there the whole day, and that also makes it more painful. And the second thing I have to say, little fun fact, if you guys went for the bad endings, if you do get there early, bad things happen. You get the bad ending. Kotomi says that...
You can get there early?
Yes, you can. You can get there early.
Yeah. That's the bad
you end. You will get there 30 minutes early, and you will get there the same time as Kotomi. And by that happening, Kyo and Ryo and Nagisa will not bump in. You'll go to the library, and Kotomi will basically say that we should stop seeing each other because I've decided to become a great person and study more.
Which really plays into the fact that it's very harrowing. The friendship they have is really what keeps Katomi from running away. Like, if it was just Tomoya, she might have had the endurance to, like, resist, but when she gets pulled into the silliness of Kyo and Nagisa and Ryo's antics...
It's like some sort of crazy sensory overload.
It's definitely what makes her realize that that's how she wants to live life. She doesn't want to live life to honor the greatness of her parents, but to have fun as a person. And that's also what her parents wished for her. That was what was in the letter.
Kotomi Mark 1 doesn't have very much RAM.
I only realized that just now as I was talking about that. And that's a nice contrast that they put in both the ending and the middle of the route. Anyway.
Isn't it an interesting contradiction that Tomoya is like urging Kotomi to make friends, but he doesn't have any himself? And it's like, kind of all the things that he is trying to help Kotomi with are things that are like wrong with his own life, you know?
Well, that's why they're so complimentary, because he's kind of learning things on his own, because hey, he's making friends too in this regard.
You can see him getting a lot closer to Kyo, despite it not being her route.
I remember there was one scene where Kotomi ran off with Ryo and Nagisa and Kyo, and he's just like, wow, I'm jealous. It's like...
It's the flowers, man.
Crazy. The flowers. Just thought that was interesting.
Well, like...
And how, like, Tomoya's a natural caregiver, I guess.
I was about to say, he's a natural caregiver, so he wouldn't care much about his own problems. He just brush it off, live life. But when he sees someone needs help, then, yeah.
I'm going to help you make 100 friends. He's like, really? That's amazing. He's like, sorry, I don't have that many. Not even close.
It's also funny how he runs out the friends to introduce to her after, like, day 3.
I think it's because he ran into Sunohara and he's like, okay, don't fuck this. Speaking of which, the Sunohara with the music changing was hilarious. Oh my god.
Oh yeah, that was amazing. It had some great comedy, didn't it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't...
It wasn't relying on Sunohara's stupidity.
Not as much, no.
Not as much, okay.
I feel like the Sunohara with the music changing was actually essential to the route, but that's just me.
Okay.
God damn it, Sunohara.
I still thought the Nandayanins were the funniest
when
part.
When he's waiting for Kotomi and Sunohara like walks up and he's just like, hey, he's like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Well, let's go. Wait a minute. When Sunohara tells him to... Whenever he makes Kotomi greet Sunohara, and Sunohara's like, oh, this is a dream, and so he just goes and bangs his head into the wall.
I thought that was too much. When he actually thought it was a dream. Yeah,
passing on those little tidbits. But I wanted to just say shout-outs to the worst character in the route, which is that fucking crow that stole the card and messed up the fortune.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I drew attention to the fact that whenever they did the fortune thing, and they was like, oh man, I hope we got all the cards, or the fortune's gonna get messed up, but they drew attention to this crow that, like, flies away. I'm just like, he stole the card. He messed everything up. It's the crow's fault.
Hey, the worst character is the biker guy.
Yeah, we broke the violin. What a dick.
Fucking biker guy. Jeez. What an asshole. There was a line there where he said, if only Kyo had her scooter, she would chase him to the depths of hell. I can imagine she would do that, yeah.
It's like, I'd beat him with his own motorcycle. It's like, that'd count as homicide, you know? It's like, an eye for an eye.
Yeah, he hit me first.
Oh, God.
No qualms about being a killer. I just wanted to say, this feels like the first traditional key route we've had in this whole book club. Like, we've sat with all the weird ones. We had,
Masai,
which Tomoyo. Is, like, very unconventional.
Yeah.
Tomoyo, which is still pretty weird, because, like, it doesn't it's follow different. The typical formula. And, yeah, we have Yukine, which is also very weird, because it's also, like, very calm and peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like, the first one Yukine which has really followed the typical simple. Curvature. Of a key route, or even a Nakige route in general.
Yeah.
Where we start with the slice of life for quite a while, then we get a sudden tragedy, which is, it hits really hard, and then we have a resolution. You know, like, with it feels a lot more... all
sprinkled in there.
Definitely, and like how the protagonist is such an active player in it too, it's...
Mm-hmm.
It feels a lot more traditional, and I'm surprised it took us this long to get find one of these routes in Clannad.
But even though it Clannad felt so traditional, kind of it's yeah, it's hard to put a theme. I know we talked about this in the before starting, but it's hard to put a theme into what the message that the route was actually trying
speaking
to give.
Speaking of themes,
yeah.
Speaking of themes,
I guess we can go ahead and talk about themes. Asper, you go
that
ahead.
That was a fucking natural segue, biscuit.
Oh yeah, segues. I love them. Anyway,
if I was just doing that very smoothly, and it's like, oh, speaking of things.
Yeah, I gotta bring
God
them
damn
in,
it,
man.
Biz.
Gotta reel them in.
God damn it.
Gotta bring up the hype. How you doing? We're talking about themes right now, cuz.
Yeah. Alright, okay. Biscuit Dogo.
My fucking gravy train. Anyways, Aspie, what did you think? What is the theme? What did this route speak to you about, man? Tell me, spill your heart, dog.
So the first thing I thought of when reading this route was accepting loss. The whole route is all about Kotomi and her what's it called? Her abandonment complex. You know, since she lost her parents at such a young age and she was completely abandoned, and she's been pretty much living her whole life alone without having the mental or emotional maturity to deal with that loss. And it still haunts her, like the moment she sees Ryo caught in a bus crash, but as it actually wasn't, it still like triggered the memory for her, and she just became regressed into a crying baby, basically. And
never got to lose a goldfish whenever she was a little kid, so.
Yeah. And so this whole route is about her reaching that point where she can accept loss. And like, you know, that whole idea of, I'm afraid because I know that once I fall in love with you, you're just going to disappear. And Tomoya's response to that is, you're right, maybe
kind of
I could
this,
disappear
like,
tomorrow.
Life apathy thing. And it's just like, suck it up, you know?
But it's so raw. Like, he doesn't make any like fake promise, like, mm-hmm. I'll be with you. Like, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to be with you forever.
Well, I mean,
he says
does.
Straight up, I could be dead no, but that's the thing. He says, I could be dead tomorrow. Like, I accept that. And we need to live on anyway. Like, no matter what happens, I love you right now. And I'm going to continue to love you even if you can't see me.
I will not live in fear.
Yeah. Isn't it like... I thought it was so beautiful, personally.
Yeah, it's really
cool. And... That's kind of the message that it really spoke to me. Is I don't know if that's a message at all, but just this idea of, pretty much. That was like fucking a proposal right there.
Pretty much.
If I ever heard one. And that was completely absent from the anime, by the way. Fucking up.
Yeah.
Like, the resolution of her arc.
Yeah, it's like, it's literally like integral.
Yeah, that's the whole resolution to her story arc never happened in the anime.
Because,
like, what?
After they
yeah, you're right,
scene,
it never
she
did.
She immediately regresses. She's like, oh, fuck, it's not worth it. And he's like, no! And then he gets.
Yeah.
He becomes Super Tomoya and saves the day.
Yeah, so I guess the message to me is, like, you know, deal with loss and accepting that people do die and we can still, you know, be happy and enjoy our lives despite that fact. And that's kind of what I got from it. But that's one thing I got from it. There's a lot more. So, Pepe, what do you think of this route? What was the main theme?
I guess it's less about accepting loss and more like being aware that the loss can happen. And
exactly
I guess
the same thing, Pepe.
No, it is different. It is different. There's being prepared, and then there's accepting in post after mourning. Like,
yeah. It's like because Kotomi was afraid to meet new people and make new friends because of possibly losing them, and that's also a big point when she tries to. When she says she wants to become a great person in the bad ending, that she doesn't. I felt at least that she doesn't want to feel that kind of loss again.
It's fear of loss. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. And I guess another message that I just thought of right now is not being guilty about what you've done, especially if it's not really a bad thing. Because one thing I noticed about Kotomi, more than being afraid of the loss of her parents, is her guilt that maybe she's the one who burned down their super important research that was going to help humanity. And that was one thing that was haunting her for the entire route. And because of that,
there were a lot of characters feeling guilty over that, different though. Things in this room.
It's so good, like, the way that she's so concerned about that, like, in post, she's like, man, I can't believe I burned that. And then you find out in the end that her own parents threw that shit out so that they could take care of her above all else. And
what
even
she burned
the,
was
even
all
the
stuff
scientist
about her.
Bro or the current guardian or whatever is just like, this is the most beautiful thing.
Like, you are their most important work. And,
fuck, that was cheesy, but I love it.
Yeah,
really.
But because of that guilt, that's what makes her try to become this great person that will continue her parents' research. You know, and that's not what her parents wanted. They wanted her to live a life with friends, and I mean, good thing that Tomoya was there to help push her in that direction. But imagine if he wasn't, you know.
And she started to go down that path, too, until she regressed and then was like, oh, well, no, I'm going abroad again. Because just before that, she had said, like, no, I'm not going abroad. I'm going to sit here and do what I want. Which is really good, because that's, you know, that's a decision some people have to make in their life. Like, you may be able to do great things, but maybe it's not what you want to do, and maybe it's just not fun. Maybe it's just not where your heart actually is, because I know I've made that decision in my life, so... something that kind of just comes to pass and you either take it or you don't.
I know that feeling all too well.
But that's funny you brought that up, because there's so many characters in this route which express guilt over different things that may be misplaced. Tomoya has a constant feeling of guilt without remembering even what it was, and it turns out that it's because he forgot Kotomi. And then there's also, you know, characters like Nagisa and Ryo always feeling guilty about something, like whether it be causing Kotomi to have her flashback or getting the violin broken, you know. She's like, stop feeling guilty over things that are beyond your control.
I noticed that's a very common theme in Japanese media.
Yeah.
They like
have an important role in this route. Even if she's a bitch.
Kyo's like that person who says the things that you don't want to hear in the worst way possible, but you have to.
True.
I guess, speaking to my own interests, of what I was kind of able to piece together in this route, kind of ties in really nicely with something that Carafian was talking about. Where he was talking about how... there's a contrast in the over... He said that he feels that there's a contrast in the actual overall, like, kind of message here in Clannad that are clashing. Where, at the beginning of the novel, he talks to Nagisa, Tomoya talks to Nagisa about finding new happiness and moving forward, and that there's always new things to find whenever other things are lost to time or whatever, right? And in this route, however, there is a lot of, Aspie found the perfect word for this, there's a lot of things that have to do with sentimentality, or specific things that aren't necessarily lost to time. There are things that are lost to time, and we do eventually come to realize that we have to move past these things, such as Kotomi's parents dying and stuff is like something that they do have to go and find new happiness. She has to go and find friends. She has to go and do these things. So that still happens. But for example, they pulled as an example was the violin and how it's it's got to be this violin, the one that got destroyed, right? And instead of just getting, you know, a new one or whatever, but they're like, no, it's got to be this one. My argument against that would be that, well, the violin's still there. Like, it hasn't gone anywhere. Just like how, like, Mr. Teddy Bear hasn't gone anywhere. It's still there. And when it's still there, you can always rekindle that flame as long as there's still, like, a little ember there, right? It's not out yet. There's always still that little bit of light shining through the dark that you can still reach for. And just because we can move forward in a lot of situations, we can always just move on with our life and throw things past. But at the same time, there are situations, there are a lot of situations that are unique where you do have to face things head on and you have to get past something so that you can move on. It's very important. And at the same time, you don't want to necessarily just throw everything away at the same time, whenever you might still be able to salvage it. There's, it's not so cut and dry. It's very gray there. Yeah. And I feel like both situations still actually fit quite well into the theme of Clannad.
There's also the collection of short stories, which is another example of like an item which holds sentimental value more so than actually being something which, you know, is there to be read.
Tomoya thought it was an important piece of research.
And that's like the beauty of literature too, like the fact that they're both able to share this story and something very concrete in their history is very romantic and very, very cool. Like and resuscitation of poetry.
The scene where they recited Dandelion Girl to each other, that was so sweet. I love that.
Excellent. Yeah. Exactly. So it, like I said, it's just not so cut and dry. I do understand, like, I get the sentiment in that it is kind of different, and when you are going into things thinking one way and things come out another way, and it's kind of weird. Kind of very close meshing and conflicting ideas, but they are actually kind of different. I think that they do go hand in hand in their own way. It's not necessarily oil and water.
I think it ties into this theme of, like, valuing what you've got while you have it, because there was a whole thing with Kotomi's parents is how, like, Kotomi regretted so much that her last words to her parents were, "I hate you." It's just, like, if she could go back, she would, like, never say that. And, yeah, just these, you know, some things we can repair, but other things we can't. And the important thing is that in the moment, we need to treasure what we have, whether that be people or objects or ideas, you know. Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. Yeah. All right. So because I was the one who did the walkthrough thing, I realized that there were some choices that were totally optional to get the ending of the route, but they unlocked a bunch of scenes that you wouldn't have gotten. So the way I played it is I went away from those optional routes first, and then I finished the route, and then I replayed it with choosing the optional choices, and I saw a lot of stuff that you might not have realized is reliant on your choices. Like, one thing is, especially with the garden, while Tomoya is working on the garden, he wakes up to find his jacket sprawled on his body, and he's saying, "Oh, I remember, I got my jacket," or something. But that doesn't happen if you don't make the choices, so it tells me that Kotomi was the one who went down and got his jacket and put it over Tomoya. And then another scene is while Tomoya is confessing that I'll be with you, even after I'm gone, I'll be with you. There was one point where Kotomi says, like, just your voice isn't enough. And right after that, they kiss. So it also implies that Kotomi is the one who initiates the kiss, whereas if you don't make those choices, Tomoya is the one who initiates the kiss. So it those choices drive her to become a lot more forward. It's really interesting how they put that into the VN, and I love how visual novels do this.
I do like how they're not essential, but it's still all dynamic. Like, there are still little changes, even if it may just be a line or two, but it's still actually kind of substantial when you think about it.
She grew, well, the most I can say is she grew because of those choices. But there was one more, like, four or five lines of dialogue that came out when you make all of the correct choices with Kotomi. And I wrote this down. It says, "One of the stars approaches me. I feel something strange in exchange, like something lost is returning to me. I can tell that my consciousness is fading, as if being wrapped in something warm, I fall into a slumber." And I know they're definitely hinting at the light orbs here, right? But and this goes back to the light orbs being related to happiness, and I feel that those small choices you make add up to Kotomi's happiness, and they make the whole thing with the light orbs more prominent. That if you didn't make those choices, there would be maybe less happiness, and you still get the light orb, but it's just less prominent. You get less of the feeling of something lost returning to him, and I still don't
know
what
he's... Pepe. Damn you, Pepe, and constructing your walkthrough in a perfect way so that you get to talk about light orbs in the final podcast.
Hey, I made them italicized. I specifically said that if they're italics, they're optional. Okay, you could have tried it yourself.
You must have forgotten the scene of the light orb because you've replayed it a couple of times, but... Playing through this, you get a scene where the light orb actually descends into the garden.
Yeah, and it disappears, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so like, Tomoe reaches out for it and it disappears, which I think is very interesting and sort of
because
symbolic.
Because he didn't gain the happiness yet.
Yeah,
happiness is just out of reach. You know, you can see it, but...
Which is very integral to... Yeah, you have to do the keep working, and that's when it's like, oh, well then you're almost there, and you know you gotta keep working. Which, yeah. Speaking to...
Just baiting him.
Was it Yarian? Somebody actually brought this up as a point that's important to make note of, is that they said that the actual collection of the light orb here is different, instead of just being kind of at the end of the route, but it actually is still at the end of the route, because you don't actually see that happening very end. It's the very last thing you see,
yeah,
actually.
After credit.
It's almost like they almost until forgot she gets about the it. Violin. Like, oh shit, we need to put this light orb thing in real quick. Like, it's very, very, very end.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's like it just teases you, like, dangling before you at that point in the vision of it's like, once you get there, you finally unlock the orb. So it's like, we'll have more to talk about that later, but yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
It's always fun to analyze these light orbs. Anyway.
Yes.
That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, so wrapping this up, let's have a quick shout-out to forum members. Helios Alpha, Kuketsuki Miyu, Zakim, Yurian, Karafian, and Naoki Saten. Good job the discussion once again, guys.
Somebody go get the sound file of is it Ryo and Nagisa doing the pachi pachi pachi? I don't know.
I already used that in the other podcast.
Oh, too late.
Yeah, thank you for your submissions once again, guys. I see most of you have already caught up with like routes that we haven't even got to on the podcast yet, so that's really good and exciting because we don't want you to have to wait for us, guys.
Good
we
to take advantage
have to delay
of
this
the
podcast.
New Year's Christmas delay.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, we had a delay for
somebody
a week.
Actually said it was like, oh man, Kotomi really slowed down. It's like, no, it's kind of what was happening.
Basically, our guest that was meant to be on this episode was Suika Shoujo, and she couldn't make this week or last week, and neither could any of the other guests, so we had to cancel. Pepe couldn't make it either last week, so. Yeah, hopefully we'll get more people next episode. So next week we have the Fujibayashi twins route, which includes Ryo and Kyo. Ryo is optional in this case, because her route doesn't get us a light orb or anything, but it still adds flavor to the experience, so we recommend checking it out. But Kyo is the essential content here. Next week we're going to be having our special guest Eotheria join us.
Remember him
from the Airbook Club.
Oh, Snake Man.
He has already told us that he's a big Ryo fan, so it'd be interesting to see the Ryo versus Kyo debate ignite in the sexy cast.
Short hair versus long hair.
Hey, don't bring that up, because in this case, long hair wins, alright?
At any rate, I'm definitely looking forward to that one, because I'm also admittedly a bit of a fan of Ryo. I'm a Ryo fag.
my favorite part of Ryo is that song by Kitasawa Ayaka.
Ah, fortune card! Oh my god. It's making me all tingly just thinking about it.
I should sneak that into the next podcast. That's a good idea. Best, guys.
You definitely should.
Come out of Ryo.
Ganbaru yo watashi.
With that said, thank you once again for joining us for the Clannad Book Club podcast. I'm your host, Aspiety, and joining me today were Pepe and Biscuit Dough. We look forward to your attendance next week. See you then, guys.
Nandene.